Nice to see you again. Ezekiel chapter 2. I'm going to go back there today. We covered some stuff last week. And we'll touch, give you a brief review, and then we'll touch on some new thoughts. And so it's not necessarily recognizing God's call for your life. We kind of talked about God's call last week. We defined it. We laid some specifics about. But this week is going to be looking at some of the hindrances to us hearing God's call. What are those things that keep us from hearing what God has to say for us, whether it's a call in your life or maybe a call to a specific work that He wants you to do. So what could some of those things be? So I'm going to read the verses again that we talked about last week, because I'm sure you don't remember them, and then we'll jump right into it. So we'll start at the end of verse 28 in chapter 1, and it says, "This was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord, and when I saw it, I fell upon my face, and I heard a voice of one that spake, and he said unto me, Son of man, stand upon thy feet, and I will speak unto thee. And the Spirit entered into me when he spake unto me, and set me upon my feet, that I heard him that spake unto me. And he said unto me, Son of man, I send thee to the children of Israel, to a rebellious nation that hath rebelled against me. They and their fathers have transgressed against me, even unto this very day. For they are an impotent children and stiff-hearted. I do send thee unto them, and thou shalt say unto them, Thus saith the Lord God. And they, whether they will hear, or whether they will forbear, for they are a rebellious house, yet shall know that there hath been a prophet among them. And thou, son of man, be not afraid of them, neither afraid of their words, though briars and thorns be with thee, and thou dost dwell among scorpions. Be not afraid of their words, nor be dismayed at their looks, though they be a rebellious house. And thou shalt speak my words unto them, whether they will hear or whether they will forbear, for they are most rebellious." So last week we talked about a couple of principles. I'm going to review them very briefly, if you either weren't here or just to refresh your memory a little bit. We talked about God's call on a person's life. And I shared a couple thoughts with you about God's call, whether it be a call to a person, to a ministry for their life, or maybe even a spiritual gift that they have. And the things about God's call was, I said, the first thing I said was, it was specifically to a person. God called Ezekiel specifically. He said, and it was the word of the Lord expressly came unto Ezekiel. And so God's call was specific to an individual, to a person. The second thing I told you guys was the person knew when God spoke to them. There was no confusion. They weren't unsure. They knew that God had spoken to them, and they knew what God said. Other people might not know, but the person who God spoke to, that particular individual knew it was God, and they knew what God had said to them. And the third thing I had said was God gave that person something specific to do. It wasn't a general thing like, okay, go ahead and do something. It was specific. He told Ezekiel what? He said, I want you to go where? To the house of Israel. He said, specifically, this is what I want you to do, and this is what I want you to say to them. So we said that God's call was specific. And then we talked a little bit about who does God call? You know, how do we know if God might be calling us to do something specific? Who does God call? And we talked about how God calls people from all different walks of life. All different walks. We said Ezekiel was a priest. He was already in the ministry. We talked about Amos. He was a farmer. Moses, he was a shepherd. The disciples were fishermen and tax collectors. So he calls people from a variety of walks of life. And then we talked about how he calls people of a variety of different ages. Some of the disciples were young, teenagers. Moses was 80. Ezekiel was likely 30. So people young, people middle-aged, people old. And people from a variety of different backgrounds with a lot of different histories, some sordid and some good. You know, God uses people with even sordid backgrounds. He did that as well. And we even talked about the difference between a burden, if you remember that, and a call. and then spiritual gifts. Burden and call and spiritual gifts. And what I tried to point out and where I tried to conclude the message was there's really almost no reason. There really is no reason. But we'll say almost for now. We'll be generous and we'll say almost no reason for any of us to say, I can't do what God called me to do. I can't. I can't do it. I'm too young. Or I'm too old. Or I don't have the right background. Or I don't have the right training. Or I didn't come from a pastor's family. Or I didn't go to whatever the excuse is. There's no excuse you and I can make to say that God can't call me either my life in general, as he called Ezekiel, or to a specific work that he wants you to do. There's not an excuse you could come up with. A legitimate excuse in my mind based on this. That's what I really wanted to conclude on. And so that's what... So my background can't preclude me from answering God's call. That was kind of the general feel of where we were at and where we ended last week. So now we'll jump into this week. How many of you have heard of a man by the name of Pat Tillman? One, two, a couple. All right. A few people. I'm going to tell you a little about this man because most of you don't know who he is. He was born in California in 1978. And he grew up, he was the oldest of three boys. And he was a normal boy. He loved sports. He loved all different kinds of things. He played football. He played baseball. And when he graduated high school, he went to Arizona State University. And he was a marketing major at Arizona State. And he also played football. He got the last scholarship that they offered as a football player to play on the football team. And he excelled in college. His major, again, was marketing. He had a 3.9 grade point average. Those of you who are not familiar with 3.9, 3.9 out of 4, almost perfect. Through 4 years of college, almost perfect grade point average in school. At the same time, he was on the football team. He was the Pac-10, which is the conference he played in. He was the defensive player of the year. For those of you who don't understand football, he was really good at football. So he was really good at football, and he was really smart. So actually, in fact, he was the Sporting News Honda Scholar of the Year, Scholar Athlete of the Year. So a combination of scholarships and athletics, he was the guy for the whole country. So a pretty accomplished guy and a bright future ahead of him. And he was drafted to play in the NFL in 2000, the year 2000. He was drafted to play in the NFL. And he went on to play for the Arizona Cardinals. He became an all-pro, which means he was a very good professional football player. And in 2002, he was offered a contract, a three-year, $3.6 million contract. Sounds pretty good to me. I'll take that. He turned it down. Why would you turn a contract like that down? You know why he did that? Because this was right after 9/11, he felt the call to serve his country in light of what happened in 9/11, so he quit playing football and he joined the military. He actually went on to be an Army Ranger. He and his brother quit his job, and he quit his professional football career to become an Army Ranger. Now, I said when I heard that and I read about this story, and I've known this story for a while, I said, wow, that's pretty impressive. Here's a guy who sacrificed everything to serve. Think about what he gave up. He gave up, obviously, a lot of money. I just shared with you all the money that he gave up and a lot more to come that he gave up in his football career. If you're a professional football player, everybody here knows you're famous. People adore you. You know, wherever you go, people are flocking to see you, and they know you, and you get special privileges. He gave up the fame. There's a lot of privilege that comes with being a professional athlete. Like I said, everywhere you go, people are giving you things and helping you along. It makes life easy. So this privilege he gave up, he had a bright career ahead of him. Not only was he a good athlete, he was a smart guy. So who knows what he could have done in life had he followed whatever the career might have been. So give up his career. He was also just recently married. So he left his wife behind. One of his friends said this about him. The general consensus is that Pat Tillman really loved his country and he wanted to serve. That was the consensus about this man. He loved his country and he wanted to serve. Was it risky? Yeah. In short order, he was going to be in Iraq, fighting in Iraq, and then a year later, fighting in Afghanistan. So that's pretty risky. Was it difficult? Yeah, sure, absolutely. Especially for someone who really, at such a young age, had a lot of privilege. Going to the Army is not an easy thing. and then going overseas. So here's a man of money and privilege and of his whole life, and now he's going to go fight. So it was tough. Do you think people might have criticized him? Some people might have second-guessed his decision. I don't know for sure, but I can't imagine they wouldn't have. What are you, crazy? What are you doing? You have all this, and you're giving it up to go fight for your country. You know what? He went to Iraq in 2002, and then in 2004, he was deployed to Afghanistan. And for the people who do know the story, everyone knows what happened. He was killed in April of 2004 in Afghanistan. Why did he do it? Why did he do it? It's kind of simple. He loved his country. He heard the call of his country. Now he's a nationalist. He loved America. And he had to go regardless of the cost. He had to go. So that was it. So he did it. And I want to look today at some hindrances, some potential hindrances that might keep us, men and women who are called by God, from hearing that call. Okay? From hearing what God has to say to us. There was nothing that really hindered Pat Tillman from hearing what God said. His country said something to him. He heard it and he went. Okay, God could be speaking to any one of us today, next week, next month. And he might be saying to you, I want you to go do such and such. I want you to go somewhere, this, that, or the other thing, whatever it is for an individual. There's a ministry there for you. There's a calling. There's a country I want you to go to. Whatever it is, what could keep you from hearing that? What are some of these things that could be keeping you from hearing that? And so we'll go through them. They're all here right in Ezekiel chapter 2. And so I'm going to cut through them. Before I get started, and you guys can stop me at any time, any questions or comments? Probably take them all at the end, but anybody have a question? I'll stop after each one. All right, so the first hindrance that I see here in the scripture from hearing God speak to you, whether it's a call to ministry like Ezekiel had or a call to some kind of service or activity, is it's found here in verse 28 of chapter 1. And it says here, this was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. And then this is Ezekiel speaking. He said, when I saw it, I fell upon my face. He fell upon his face. And so the first hindrance, I think, for us not hearing God when he speaks or he calls is the person is not worshiping. The person is not worshiping God. Not that the person isn't a worshiper, because you could be a worshiper, but at the time God speaks to you, for whatever reason, you're not worshiping. See, in this story here, Ezekiel saw a vision of God that's laid out in chapter 1. He saw this vision with beasts and wheels and all kinds of different things, which we're not going to get into. And then he saw the glory of the Lord, and then he heard God speak to him, and he was so overwhelmed by the incident that he just fell flat on his face. He fell flat on his face. And I can't be dogmatic about it, but I get the sense that Ezekiel knew who he was as a person. He knew what kind of person he was, and he knew who God was. He knew who God was. And so the thought of God approaching him in any way was overwhelming to him. It was overwhelming. That thought was overwhelming to him. And it leads me to believe that there was a high level of intimacy between Ezekiel and God. There was genuine fellowship between the two of them. He knew who God was. He had a reverence for God. He had a closeness to God. He had a friendship with God. I'd say if you or I was genuinely interested in hearing God speak and knowing his will, and knowing where he wants us to serve, if you have that interest, if you have one of those things, if you want to hear God, if you want to know God's will for your life, if you want to be available when God calls, if he does call, in our lives, there has to be that level of intimacy between you and the Lord. There has to be that level of fellowship. There has to be a level of dependence between you and God. There has to be a closeness and a reverence for you young people and us adults, a respect and a reverence for God and His commandments, not a blowing off of what God tells you to do. There's got to be that worshipful attitude. I think Ezekiel had that worshipful attitude towards God, and therefore he could hear from God, a yearning for Him. You got to be a worshiper. Now, practically speaking, that all sounds great, but practically speaking, and this is not really necessarily from the text, but practically speaking, what does a worshiper look like? What could someone who worships God, what would be some of the habits you would see in them? What would be some of the tendencies you'd see in their lives? What would be indicative of a worshiper? Well, there's a few things. I'll just throw out a few. It's not an exhaustive list, but it's some things you might have. Just a couple of thoughts. Someone who's a worshiper of God has got to have a regular devotional life with God. If you worship the Lord, you've got to be regularly talking to Him and hearing from Him. That means Bible study, personal Bible study, prayer time. You want to talk to God, you want Him talking to you. If that's not part of your regular life, you're probably, not definitely, but probably not a worshiper of God. And you're going to probably have a difficult time hearing from God. It's got to be a person who is dependent upon God, not someone who's self-sufficient. I can do it myself. I'll take care of this. Someone who says, Lord, if you don't help me, I can't do this, whatever it is. If you don't help me, I can't do anything in life. If you don't have that sense of dependence upon God, it's difficult for you to be a worshiper of God. If you're not someone who's committed to public worship, okay? If you're not showing up at the times where we publicly worship God, then it's likely that you're not a worshiper. Maybe you're here, okay, because you got to be here, or because your parents made you come, or because it's your obligation to come. Well, that's not a worshiper. That's someone, I guess, who's obedient, and I appreciate that, but the heart still isn't right. It's going to be hard for you to hear from God. I'll throw a few other things. You know, if you don't have any desire to serve the Lord, you're probably not a worshiper of God. If you're not someone who respects God's word and honors it and reverences it and tries to follow His commands, you're probably not a worshiper of God. So the first hindrance to hearing God, if He's calling you in life, is you're just not worshiping God. Again, I didn't say you weren't a worshiper. You could be. But at this time in your life, you're not worshiping God. And so that's the first. The second hindrance to worshiping God is also found in verse. I said I would stop. I didn't stop. Sorry, I'm used to just preaching and going instead of teaching. Anybody have any questions? Or okay, all right, I'll move on then. The second one, I'm going to use some, I guess, the vernacular when I say it, but it's also in verse 28, and it goes on past what I had just read. So he saw the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord, and when I saw it, first I said I fell on my face. He was worshiping. And then he said, I heard a voice of one that spake. He heard a voice of one that spake. And then it's funny, Ezekiel in the next couple of verses mentions four times, I heard God speak. I heard God speak. I heard God speak. I heard God speak. And so the second hindrance that I would suggest to you about hearing God's call, and I don't like using these words, but there's just too much noise in your life. There's just too much noise. You can't hear. You can't hear. Again, he heard four times, he said, I heard God speak. I heard God speak. He was sensitive to God's voice, and he recognized God's voice when it was there. There wasn't a lot of clutter. There wasn't a lot of things in his life that distracted him from hearing from God. Maybe it's because he was a worshiper, that he knew God. And he knew when he heard, oh, that must be God. I can hear it. I can hear it. I like the story of Elijah. So Elijah, there's a lot of good stories about Elijah, but great man of God. And he had just come off a couple of great victories, whether it was he had the drought, that he announced a drought, and he announced the end of the drought. In Israel, and then he had that victory over the priests of Baal, the 450 priests of Baal. So these two kind of mountaintop moments, and then all of a sudden King Ahab and King Jezebel are after him, all right? And he's on the run. He's on the run. He's scared. He's at the point where he's almost suicidal. He says, God, just kill me, all right? I'm the only one who's left. It's only me. And God kind of appears to him and kind of to encourage him and not recommission him, but to give him a little bit of a thing to do. And in the story, do you guys know what happened there? Anybody know the story, what happened there? God came to him, and how did he come to him? Three different things happened. What were they? First was a great wind that tore the rocks, right? And what was the next one? An earthquake. So an earthquake came. And the third thing? Fire. Fire. I read the story. That's why I know. So I wouldn't know either if I hadn't read it. I wouldn't know it was something, but I wouldn't know exactly what it was. But what does it say about that? Was God in any of those things? Actually, he caused them, but he wasn't in them. You know how God spoke to Ezekiel? Still, small voice, right? Really, really quiet voice. That's how he communicated. Communicated in a small, quiet voice. And I imagine if Ezekiel had a lot of noise going on in his life, I mean, if Elijah had a lot of noise going on in his life, if there were a lot of things that were preoccupying him, he probably wouldn't have heard. Same thing with Ezekiel. Same thing with you and I. You've got all kinds of stuff going on. How are you going to hear when God just whispers to you? That's how he speaks. He doesn't come in a wind. He doesn't come in an earthquake. He doesn't come in a fire. He caused them, but that's not how he spoke to Elijah. He spoke to him very, very quietly. Very quietly. And so, what might be some of the issues that are distracting us so that we can't hear that still small voice? I'll just give you a couple of thoughts. Maybe you got a job or a career, and you love what you're doing, and business careers can be very consuming. They can demand a lot of your time, a lot of your energy, and a lot of your emotion. Maybe you're just consumed by that career, that job, whatever it is that you're doing, and that just got all your focus, and that's where your time is spent. That's where your energy is spent. That's where your passion is. And so you're so focused on that you just don't. My wife always says to me, I'm sitting at the house sometimes, and sometimes I'm doing something. I'm getting a little bit deaf, too, which is not a bad thing. And I'm sitting there, and mayhem is going on in the house. Bedlam is breaking loose. And she walks into me. She says, don't you hear what's going on? And I'm like, no, what's going on? Really? I'm just sitting there. I have no idea. Or but maybe you're so consumed with what your career or your profession that you can't hear when God speaks. Or maybe you're a mom at home and you got your kids going on, and maybe you're teaching them, and maybe you're running them around all over the place, and you're so focused on your children, and you're so focused on the to-do list, and you're so focused on all the things that you have to get done, that God might be saying, hey, you can't hear him. You can't hear him. Or, hey, maybe like a lot of us, your primary interest in life is pleasing yourself. All right? You like to please yourself. You're always thinking about what is it that I want to do and how do I satisfy those appetites that I have. We call them hobbies. We make ourselves feel good about them. We call them hobbies, those things that I like, right? But they so dominate you and they so possess your focus that all you can think about is those things. And then when God speaks, you just can't hear him because you're so busy planning out the next thing. I'm going on vacation or I'm doing this or whatever it may be. There's a million things. Maybe it's your friends, okay? Maybe it's social media or your phone. You know, there's a million different things. The bottom line is your life is so noisy that you just can't hear when God speaks to you. You can't hear. That's a big hindrance. I'm sorry not to bring stories of me and my wife, but my wife and I were sitting in our house probably like 2 weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks, 3, I can't keep track. So we're sitting there, and our kids were all out. I don't know where they were. They were doing something. They were all out. And I looked. It was me, my wife, and our dog. And I sat in my – I'm getting very old. I have this little chair that I sit in. So I'm sitting in my chair, and she's on the sofa across from me. And she's needlepoint. No. She's on her phone, the modern version of needlepointing. She's sitting looking at her phone. And I just looked at her. I said, listen. And I said, oh, that's the sound. It was silent. And I never have silence in my house. My kids are the best, but they're noisy. Very noisy. And it was just quiet. It was just quiet. I said, the beautiful sound of silence. Beautiful sound of silence. Does your life allow you silence with the Lord? Does your commitments allow you for that silent time with the Lord? Do the decisions that you're making every day allow you to have that quiet time, that silent time where the Lord can speak to you? Do your appetites, your passions, your hobbies, they allow you that silence with the Lord so he can speak to you. I would say that some of us just don't worship God, but some of us, things are just too noisy. And so we can't hear when God speaks, because he could be speaking and you just can't hear. Doesn't mean you're not a good person. Doesn't mean you don't love the Lord. Doesn't mean you don't want to do right. You just can't hear. And so I would say that the second hindrance is that there's probably too much noise in your life. Too much noise. And so, questions? Anybody? Comments? Yes. I think that you can, that's a very good question. I think what you can do there is, no, you can't quit your job, but is a question, is a job a consuming thing to you, or is it something you do to earn a living? Does it have boundaries that you've created around it, or is it allowed to control your whole life? So a career can become all-consuming, or it can be something you go to at 8 o'clock and come home at 6 o'clock. And so if you allow anything, good or bad, to consume you, it takes the place of God. So yes, you can't quit your job, but yeah, I believe you have to keep it in its proper place. That would be my suggestion for someone who has a career and knows the challenges of that. That's all. So, yes, Liz. Silence. You need time. You need quiet time. You need that quiet time where you can just hear from God and he can speak to you and you can speak with him. It's critical. It's critical. Just like a husband and a wife, you need to have that time together. If you're going to develop a relationship. If you're going to develop good points. Thank you. So the second hindrance was, I can't hear God. I just can't. It's too noisy. The third hindrance to hearing God's call, either to our lives or to serve him, is found in verses 3 through 7 in chapter 2. And this is really what God is telling Ezekiel to go do. And he said unto me, Son of man, I send thee to the children of Israel, to a rebellious nation that hath rebelled against me. They and their fathers have transgressed against me, even unto this very day, for they are impotent children, stiff-hearted. And I send them to you, and whether they hear or whether they don't hear, and again, he says they're rebellious. He keeps telling them all the bad things about them. And then he goes on to verse 6. He says, Son of man, don't be afraid of them or their words. They're probably not going to have nice things to say to you, or they might do some not nice things to you. Though briars and thorns, again, not sounding so pleasant, and be with thee, and thou dost dwell among scorpions, be not afraid of their words, nor dismayed at their looks. Though they be a rebellious house. You know what the third hindrance, I think, is to hearing God's call? Challenges? Yeah. It's hard. Sometimes God calls you to do something hard. All right? God's just not going to always either call a person into a full-time work that's to be like, hey, you know, go lay on the beach in some Caribbean island, and that's your ministry to us. That's your ministry to me. That Aruba, I don't know if anyone's seen that video. I don't want to bring it up, but my wife shows me this video of these missionaries called to Aruba to be missionaries to the scuba divers in Aruba.
Not our missionaries.
No, not our missionaries. They're good missionaries in Aruba. I just said Aruba because the video my wife showed me. The Shields are great missionaries, and they happen to be in Aruba. I love the Shields, by the way. They're great people. He would go anywhere. But it's hard. It's hard. You know, there's a lot of different ways things can be hard. I mean, look at Ezekiel. He had a hard message to proclaim. He had to tell these people some tough things. They weren't going to be happy with him. God says, give him that hard message. That's not easy. That's hard. I don't want to hear that. I certainly don't want to hear them have to do that. Or maybe you have to go to a hard group of people. Or the ministry that God's given you is to a hard group of people. Maybe he says, I want you to go to the Hasidic Jews and start telling them the gospel, stand on the corner and tell them the gospel. That's scary. I've done that before. I want no part of that. That's hard. Look at Israel. He says they're rebellious. They're stiff-hearted. They're stubborn. They don't want to hear what you have to say to them. But God didn't say, well, you know what? They didn't want to hear you, so you don't have to go. He says, no, you're going there. And it was hard. And then it talks a little further about briars and thorns and scorpions. That speaks to pain. That speaks to discomfort. That speaks to hardship. That's what he said. Even before he sent them, this is what's going to happen. And there's a possibility that there's going to be some real sacrifices in your life. If you listen to what God tells you to do, and you're sure of it, there's going to be some sacrifices. You know, potentially there might be some financial pain. Maybe God says, all right, you got a nice job, you got to give it up and go do something else. And you're going to have to lose some money. Are we willing to do that? That's not easy. That's hard. You know, maybe your life is going to be characterized by a great deal of uncertainty. Right? Sometimes when God calls you to do something, he told Abraham what? What did he say to Abraham when he told him? He said, go. Did he tell him where to go? Kind of told him. Did he tell him anything else? Nope. He said, I'll tell you as we go. Step by step. So maybe God's call will lead to a lot of uncertainty in your life. And you know what? We don't like uncertainty as people. We don't like uncertainty. There's probably a good chance you're going to face criticism from your family, from your friends, maybe even from some people in your church. You're doing what? Where? Why? Have you thought about this? Do you realize what you're doing to yourself and your family? Right? If you're a person, you have children, you're going to put your children through that? And so you might face criticism from even the ones you love. You might be separated from your family. Hey, it might shatter your dreams for your future. I'm young. I got all my life planned out. I got all these dreams. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to go to law school, and then I'm going to go to medical, blah, 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 boom, all my dreams are shattered. Those are hard things. Those are hard. And so we say, I can't be God. Can't be, because it's hard. I told you last week I like reading missionary biographies. I read the story of this lady, Evelyn Brandt was her name, and she and her husband, she was born in like 1890s, I would say, and she and her husband were not really medical missionaries, but they were the kind of people that took like a one-year intensive class in medicines to like primitive people, like, you know, different kinds of ways to help people with some basic medicine so they can go into kind of places that are remote and help the people preach the gospel to also help them with their medical needs. And so they went to India. She and her husband, they had two kids while they were there, and they were ministering in India, and they were kind of on the plains of Madras is where they were, and there were these mountains, five mountains that surrounded where they had their ministry, and no one would go to those mountains. No one would go there. The people, even the people who lived there on the plains wouldn't go. Missionaries wouldn't go. They wouldn't go, and they said, people go up there and they die. They die. So no one goes. But the Lord told, at the time, her husband and her, you need to go. You need to go. So they took their two little kids, and no one would go with them, not even locals, and they headed up. And I'll fast forward the story. Eventually, her kids went back to England to go to school, so it was her and her husband. And within a year or two after that, her husband died. He got the Blackwater fever, which is one of those things that you died from, and in 2 days he was dead. So here she is, probably in her 40s, and she goes back to England to get things settled, and they were of some means, so she had some, you know, affluent family, and she could stay in. Everyone said, you got to stay here. She goes, nah, I'm not staying here. I'm going back to India. So she went back by herself and stayed in India till she was 55 years old. And that's the retirement age of missionaries with this mission board. So she had to come back to England again. And the board says, okay, you know, we want you to serve here, do something for us here in your retirement. She goes, no, I'm not retiring. The Lord told my husband and I to go to each one of those five mountains, and I've only been to one. So I'm going back. And the mission board said, no, you can't do that. You're a 55-year-old. You're a single woman. It's dangerous. She goes, I'm going back whether you send me back or I go by myself without any support. And she went back, and she went to three or four of those mountains up till she was 87 years old by herself on a little bicycle. That's hard. But it wasn't hard for her. Just like it wasn't hard for Pat Tillman to go and give up everything he had. It wasn't hard for her. Here's a quote I kind of like, and I got to speed up a little bit here. I only have one more left, so I don't have to speed up that much. We already had some questions, so I don't have to take too many. I don't like the worldly part of the quote, but I like the hardship part of the quote. So you'll see when I read it. It's Teddy Roosevelt. I think I read it before, so you might say, I remember that. I love it. Love the quote. It says, it's not the critic who counts. not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, who at best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement. I don't like that part. Who at best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those timid souls who know neither victory or defeat. Again, I don't like the worldly part of it, like I'm going for high achievement, I want to succeed, but I like the daring for the Lord. It's good to be daring for the Lord. It's good to try something. If you're sure that God's told you to do something, okay, and it's okay to try something, even if it's hard. It's okay even if it's hard. And the last thing, the last hindrance to hearing God's call on your life or to a ministry is, it's in verse 6 here. And God says to Ezekiel, he said, "And thou, son of man, be not afraid of them, neither of their words." You know what a hindrance is? And it's a very reasonable hindrance. It's fair. We're human beings. We're people. We're just afraid. There's nothing wrong with being afraid, but we're afraid. And there are some legitimate things to be afraid of. Again, sometimes God asks you to do something that's hard. And so there are legitimate things to be afraid of. What could some of them be? You know what? You got to have, if God calls you to do something and it's different from what you're doing today, you have to have faith in God's ability to provide and to orchestrate for you. There might be a lot. When he told Abraham to go, he said, "Just go." And he said, "I'll take care of all the details." Well, Abraham didn't know what the details. We do because we read the story now. We know there was a relatively happy ending. Everything was good. And so we're like, oh, what's the big deal that he went? But when God just says, go, and he says, this is what you're going to do, and I'll kind of give you the details as we go along, that's scary. Most of us like to be kind of told what's going on first. I like to say, and so this is kind of leads to my second point, many of us have the motto in life of, I'm not going to move forward until everything makes sense, until everything's laid out for me. So God, you want me to go do this or that? All right, you need to lay it all out for me. Hunter talked about it when he told us a few weeks ago how he's leaving. He was a little scared to come here. He wasn't going to come because God didn't lay it all out in front of him for him. God left a couple of those questions unanswered. So he said, I'm not going to go. And then God told him, no, that's wrong. That's wrong. Because sometimes God doesn't tell us, and that's scary. But he doesn't always get things all in line, and then you say, okay, now I'm going to go. That's not faith. That's sight. Think of the story when Israel, they're about to enter into the promised land. They're crossing over the Jordan. They're about to face, and they'll go and they'll conquer Jericho. And all right, what happens? So they got the Ark. If you know the story, they got the Ark of the Covenant. The priests got them. I think there was 12 priests, I think. And God tells them, all right, I'm going to part the Jordan River. Right? So, okay, so I'm sure the people are all sitting there saying, okay, when it parts, we'll go. That's not how the story goes, is it? What do they say? The priest got to go in the water first. Now, what did they say about the Jordan River at that time? Overflowing its banks. So if those priests didn't get in the water, guess what? They were never going over to cross the river. Okay, so sometimes we have to, it's not all going to be right out in front of you. Maybe you're afraid of just a life of uncertainty, as I talked about, or hardship. That's very fair. But that shouldn't be the thing that keeps you from serving. It's okay to be afraid. Just don't let that fear stop you from doing what God has told you to do. God has asked you to do. And so I'll end with I guess these questions, and then we'll take some questions from you guys. Are you a worshiper? That's the first question. Pat Tillman was a worshiper. He loved his country. His life proved it. Do you have too much noise in your life? Can you hear when God speaks? I'll go back to my friend Pat Tillman. He heard, right? When the call to serve his country came, he was gone. It was easy. Boom, done. Despite all the noise around him. Can you hear God's voice or is it too noisy? Are you willing to do hard things if God tells you to do them? I'm not saying we should be masochistic and do hard things for no reason. There's no purpose for that. But if God asks you to do something hard, are you willing to do that? And Pat Tillman was. Being an Army Ranger is probably pretty hard. Giving up all those things he gave up are probably pretty hard. And then, are you too afraid? And Pat Tillman wasn't afraid, right? He knew he could die, and yet he still went. So there are just some things to think about, some things that could potentially legitimate. By the way, all four of these things are legitimate things that could keep us from hearing what God has for us, whether it be a call or a work. So just think about those things. So any comments, questions? Mr. Fred.
Is the call to go to Afghanistan necessarily a godly call?
For Pat Tillman? Or a person in ministry?
Yeah, for a person in ministry. Because Afghanistan, it could be considered, it's debatable.
What's debatable?
To some degree.
What's debatable?
Well, debatable, some people don't like the fact that we should be there.
That's political.
Or we're killing other people.
Well, I think if God calls you to go to people to tell them about the Lord, then there's probably no place that's debatable.
Is that the reason that he went, though, to tell about children?
Oh, no, he went, his story was purely secular. He was not in ministry at all, which makes it even stronger in my mind. He did it because he loved his country. Imagine, okay, that's, I think, by the way.
I'm not saying he's wrong, I'm just...
Oh, do you think he made the wrong decision?
No, I don't know.
I don't think God called him to do it. I think he felt a call from his country. He was a patriot. Yeah, Lisa, then Amos.
Yeah,